Good evening, members. I am calling the Minnesota Senate Jobs and Economic Growth Finance and Policy Committee back to order. We were in recess. We are now back on the record. Members, just as a friendly reminder, just in case there was someone that wasn't here, once a Senate author presents the bill, they can take the time that they need in order to make sure that they capture the essence of it for the benefit of the committee. Then we have identified testifiers who will only be given 2 minutes each, and we will time you. We also encourage testifiers not to repeat what someone else said, because that just means that someone becomes unnecessary. So we would hope that you would be mindful of that, and the committee is able to ask you any questions any and all questions that's needed. Just so you know that we had a quorum from earlier today, so we do not have to reestablish that again, but we have individuals that will be listening, as well as those who will be coming in and out, because there's a number of committees going on today. But with that being said, I'm going to ask Senator Hochschild to come up so that we will look at Senate File 4446. If Melanie Bohan and Hannah Alstead will also join Senator Hochschild. And Senator Hochschild, before you get started, I understand that there's an A1 amendment. Would you like for us to allow you to give us some opening statements, and then we can deal with the A1, and we'll probably have someone from the nonpartisan staff sort of go through the A1 just so we clearly understand what it is. With that being said, Senator Hochschild, welcome to the committee. Identify yourself for the record and go forward with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I feel like we were just here and now we're back, so thanks for the time. I'm Grant Hochschild, State Senator from District 3.
And I know, Senator Hochschild, that was only Van Hayden who would be disruptive and start clapping in one of our sessions. Please alert him to the Senate rules. He's a film guy. He's not accustomed to this sort of protocol here. Senator Hochschild.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to express that last year was a really exciting year, and I try not to look back, but it is relevant to this bill because we were able to pass a pretty historic film tax credit that is going to help us expand film production in Minnesota, just like it happens in many other states like California and Georgia and other states that are known for film. And the reason that's important to me is because I think Minnesota has a lot to offer the film industry. We have four seasons. We have forest. We have agriculture. We have urban environments like your district, Senator Champion. We have mining. We have all of these things. We have the Lake Superior shore that looks like an ocean. So many opportunities to really encapsulate all the different environments that we might need for the film industry. And now we're looking at taking the next step. The film and TV production industry invests locally in businesses, local workers, and you'll hear some of that testimony here in a minute. And it also features desirable places all across our state. However, Minnesota is one of the only states that has a 501c3 organization overseeing our state film program. The film office this bill seeks to create would oversee the recently expanded film tax credit that I just got done describing, promote Minnesota as a place for film and television production, and coordinate all industries vital to television and film production. Currently, these tasks are split between DEED and a nonprofit called Minnesota Film and TV. While Minnesota Film and TV is a terrific organization, and I can attest to that, it makes sense to have a government entity oversee the use of state tax dollars instead of a nonprofit. And I have attended many of the events with this organization and seen other film offices from other states talk about the success of creating this type of thing in our state. And I can attest to the fact that they have had a lot of success bringing TV programs, streaming, and all these different opportunities. So I really think this could be a huge benefit to Minnesota. And with that, I do have the amendment, if you'd like to talk about that, as well as some testimony, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Putnam moves the A1 amendment. Is that your motion there? All right. And so we have the A1 that is before us. We will have Ms. Noehner go through it and tell us what the A1 does, and then if you have any additional comments on the A1, we can do that.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, the A1 is reducing an appropriation in last year's jobs omnibus bill by 825,000 in fiscal year 2025, and then reappropriating that money on the last page of the amendment to the Director of Explore Minnesota Tourism for the Office of Explore Minnesota Film. And the two appropriations that are being reduced show up on page 9 of the amendment, the first being a $325,000 appropriation to the Film and TV Board. So they're just reducing the amount in the second year, keeping the amount in the first year, and then the next reduction is on line 9.16, reducing $500,000 in the second year, again, an appropriation to the Film and TV Board.
And Ms. Nona, just to make certain, with those reductions and reappropriations, that makes this bill revenue neutral?
Mr. Chair and members, that's correct.
And that's music to my ears because I do not want to spend another dime. Okay. So thank you so very much.
Mr. Chair, if I might just add a little, Senator, one more context to the amendment. Mm-hmm. I think what's really great about what we figured out here is that the Minnesota Film and TV nonprofit that we just talked about gets these appropriations. And so with the creation of an office through Explore Minnesota, we would in essence be sort of shifting to a new fund, you know, to a new funding purpose, which is why we're able to do what we described in the amendment.
And Senator Hochschild, it also seems that you believe that this is the best place for all the this activity around TV and film should happen with a governmental entity that oversees it. Doesn't necessarily mean that all the folks who are from the Minnesota Film and TV Board would not participate in some way as a citizen or whatever, because it takes all of us in order to make this good work happen. Is that a fair rendering of your thinking?
That is exactly right, Mr. Chair, and we've also seen that across the country this is a best practice in many of the states that have high film production, California, Georgia, Florida. Every single state has this type of structure except for Wisconsin, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, Nebraska, and Alaska.
Any other discussions on the A1 amendment that is before the committee? Any other discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of the A1 say aye. All those opposed say no. The A1 amendment is adopted. Senator Dreheim, I know what you're thinking, and no one else says anything but me and you. Is that correct? Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you. Now, Senator Hochschild, we have adopted the A1. Where would you like to go from here?
Mr. Chair, if it suits you, I would like to move to our testimony from Melody Behan.
Behan,
as well as Hannah Alstead with the Teamsters.
All right. So thank you so much. And in that order, if you will state your name for the record and give us your 2 minutes of testimony, and we welcome you to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Melody Behan. I'm the Executive Director of Minnesota Film and TV. Thank you for allowing me to testify in support of Senate File 4446. State film commissions have been a vital part of the U.S. film and TV production industry since the 1970s and are recognized by most states as an essential economic development tool, particularly with the growth and importance of state production incentive programs since the 1990s. In the early 1980s, there was an attempt to open a state film office in Minnesota, but when that effort failed, a group of industry leaders opened Minnesota Film and TV as a 501c3 nonprofit to serve that role. While Minnesota Film and TV is able to perform many of the functions of a state film office, there are critical areas where the authority and connections of a government agency is needed. We believe the state and our industry are currently ill-served by relying on a nonprofit to perform the duties of a state film office. Currently, 43 states have state agency film commissions located within the state's Economic Development or Tourism Department. These offices administer the incentive programs, provide guidance to productions on locations, crew, and vendors, assist or issue film permits, and market the state as a production destination to the greater industry. A few states, such as Florida, Iowa, and Missouri, maintain state film commissions even in the absence of a state incentive program. We are the only state, as the Senator said, that relies on a 501c3. After decades of seeing our once thriving industry shrink because of the lack of a competitive incentive program, the legislature recently made an investment in the future of the industry in the form of a new tax credit. The lack of a state office to provide oversight of this investment seems unwise.
Ms. Bayham? Yes. I could tell from that groan that you had a little more time. I think you would have had a little more time if you didn't repeat something that Senator Hochschild had already
Right.
But I'll give you a chance to just make one more sentence before we go on to Ms. Austed.
I feel I've made my points. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
I think you made your point as well. Thank you so much for being here. But if you'll stay there for a second, because then we'll go to the next testifier, and then we'll see if the committee has any questions of either one of you. Ms. Elstead, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Please identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Hannah Alstead, and I'm the political director for the Teamsters Joint Council 32, representing 75,000 active and retired members across Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Iowa. I'm here today to speak in support of Senate File 4446. The Teamsters represent 15,000 motion picture division members across the country, and we were absolutely thrilled with the passage of last year's incentive program that has allowed our state to become competitive in the film and TV industry. You've heard the statistics, so I won't go into that. Minnesota is the one state that relies on a 501c3 nonprofit to perform their duties of a film commission. And while Minnesota Film and TV has done their very best work on this in the state, it has created both a confusing and inefficient process for the administration of the production incentive programs. The Teamsters, along with our labor siblings in SAG-AFTRA and IATSE, are proud of Minnesota Film and TV for becoming incredible stewards of this incentive. We know this is an industry that is here to stay, and let's just make sure we're doing it right. Thank you, Senator Hochschild, for your work on this bill, and thank you for allowing me to testify.
Thank you so very much. We appreciate your testimony. Senator Hochschild, were you going to say something?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I do have one other testifier. I apologize. I led with the first two, but I do have one last one, Brian Simpson.
No, we know that you have another testifier, but we want to make sure that we get these, get any questions answered answered of these two, and then we certainly bring Mr. Simpson up. Any questions to these two testifiers? Senator Joyham.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for bringing the bill forward. My question has to do with the funding ongoing. So the 825 will help, my understanding would be, help establish the office. And then of that 825, how much will go to do the intent of the office? How much will be going to set it up? And then ongoing, what is the projected funding looking at?
Senator Hochschild.
Thank you, Chair Champion, and Senator Dreheim. I might ask fiscal staff to clarify sort of what the initial appropriation is and if any of that is ongoing.
Ms. Noehner.
Mr. Chair and members, could you repeat the question, Senator Dreheim?
His question was really as to the money that's been allocated that makes it revenue neutral, how much of it is ongoing in order to make sure that there's sustainability when it comes to the office.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and Senator Dreheim, the appropriation as it's written right now would be ongoing. So the amount that was taken out of the appropriations from last year would have been from the second year, making the first year appropriation a one-time appropriation.
So, Senator Dreheim, so when we made the appropriation last year, the revenue that has been articulated was already ongoing. So,
yep.
So Explore Minnesota will not have to give that money to the film board. It'll just be in-house now, and they will do this work in-house. Senator Dreheim.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the explanation. So base funding is going to be $825 moving forward, and that's kind of what I wanted to know, so thank you.
And needless to say, I'm certain that when it's a budget year and if Explore Minnesota and others believe that there should be some other consideration for this committee, they will come forth at that particular time. Any other questions? But I do have a question. I think it was Ms. Bayham, you indicated that 43 other states have this office within its tourism department, and based on that information, are they seeing success with that model as opposed to the model that we had before? Even though we understand that the Minnesota Film and Television Board has done a really good job, we can. I always have this model that there's always room for improvement. So, Ms. Bayham.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you. Yes, all of the other states have their film office either within tourism or within their economic development directly. And the success of these offices, it has been, I think, very good. When you look at the amount of film and television production that happens every year, it has increased every year, and it has spread out from the hubs of Los Angeles, New York, and Atlanta, and we just want to make sure we get some of that here. The model that we currently have is not a model that any other state has, and it is, it's not a good model. Thank you.
Thank you. So, okay, any other questions? Senator Herr, before we go to
Mr.
our
Chair,
next testifier.
Thank you, Senator Hauschild, and thank you for the testifier coming forth on this. I wonder what would be the outlet be, because nowadays, you know, we don't, people still watch TV. Some people just turn it on and let CNN run on the background, but our culture has changed into tuning to TV like those days where we only have television and radio. Now we have social medias. Is that what are the outlet? What will be the outlet for venues that develop from Explore Minnesota film?
Senator Hauschild, or to any one of the testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Herr. I think that's exactly right, Senator Herr. You know, the landscape is changing, and I would argue, and I think my testifier can clarify this as well, that it's actually expanding because of the streaming services, because of what we're seeing with the sort of decentralization of cable television. We're seeing television shows expand exponentially. And in fact, when I was at one of the Minnesota TV and film events, we heard from an office in another state, I believe it was Georgia or Florida, talk about how they had landed a TV series in their state because of the new incentive program, and it was a huge deal because it really brought that first TV series there and then sort of expanded from there. So the opportunities to me are endless, but you're exactly right. We don't know what AI is going to do. We don't know what social media expansion or TikTok or those things are going to do to how we consume entertainment, and we'll see. But hopefully by having the incentive program, having a film office, we can be prepared as a state to take advantage of all those opportunities.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, so we will now go to Brian Simpson, who's with the International Alliance of Stage Employees and Studio Mechanics. And then we'll also ask, and I know they're not on the list, but I have a question for him. Van Hayden, I'd like for you to come to the table and switch with Ms. Bayham. All right, so Mr. Simpson, if you introduce yourself for the record and give us your 2 minutes of testimony. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thanks for having me. Before I get started, my name is Brian Simpson with IATSC Local 490. And before I get started, I just want to, because I'll forget, there is a joint labor letter in your packets that you can find urging you to support this as well. So I said I'm with IATSC Local 490. We are a labor union that represents film and TV crew in the state of Minnesota. Our members work in almost every aspect of film and TV production. We cover office staff, prop masters, wardrobe stylists, location managers, script supervisors, grips, gaffers, electricians, painters, set carpenters, set decorators, makeup artists, sound mixers, craft services, set medics, and also special effects, among others. All of these are real Minnesota jobs. They're all real middle-class jobs. Senator Hauschild really summed up everything. I don't want to repeat anything and get called out. I love it. So what I really want to do is talk about, like, you've heard that this is overseen by this outside organization, a 501c3 nonprofit, which seems like a good idea to outsource things. But as you've heard as well, we as the state are still paying for it. And what does that actually mean for a set carpenter, like a Minnesota resident, a makeup artist, or a special effects technician? It means that the organization that's overseeing this production tax credit, which is so important to our industry, that organization is spending 40 hours a week fundraising to meet a match grant from the state. They're not spending that full 40 hours a week promoting our state and overseeing this program that all of us, you know, to really put it bluntly, the blue collar type industry that is making this industry, we need this program to work. And we strongly urge you to consider including this in your bill.
Thank you so much. Yes. Thank you for that testimony. The reason why I asked Mr. Van Hayden to come forward, because we also have been talking a lot about expanded opportunities in our marketplace, whether it's streaming, whether it's with Netflix, and just all the other platforms. Van Hayden, I want him to tell a little bit, and he likes to talk too, so I want him to know he's not going to get longer than 2 minutes to just talk a little bit about the work that you're doing and the work that you're doing and how there could potentially be an opportunity here in Minnesota, and why you feel so strongly about this bill and calling me 50 times in order to get me to hear this bill. So Van Hayden, to that point, will you introduce yourself for the record and answer the questions that I've outlined for you? Van Hayden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Van Hayden. I'm the cousin of your former colleague, Senator Hayden, Jeffrey Hayden, my second cousin. As you know, we have a family tradition of being kind of vocal and wordy. But I think this is the perfect committee, the Jobs Committee, that we are before today, because for me, my personal experience has been, I attended the University of Minnesota. I studied journalism and political science. I never had an intention of going into the film industry, and I saw a movie that influenced me that was done by Spike Lee, and I followed that pursuit, and I ended up landing a job with Spike Lee in the late 80s, and that led to the next job and the next job, and Spike had hired me to work in his production company. I had no training whatsoever in film or television production except for TV news. And my experiences over these 35 years that I've been doing this now, having worked on a number of projects from big-budget feature films, low-budget independent films, music videos, commercials, that entire realm. Here's what's great about it. You do not need a college degree to make a living, working, union wage. This is an opportunity. It's a jobs investment program that will train you from not having any experience, but just an interest in one of those paths that Brian laid out, any of those jobs, prop man, hair, makeup, and wardrobe, any of those departments, just to having an interest in that and being able to be trained up and serve as sort of an apprentice, as a production assistant, and then to move up the ladder as you go forward in your career. 35 years I've been doing this now, and have never had another job outside of the film industry in that period of time. So it's an incredible jobs training program. And if we're building this from the ground up, we have to do this in an inclusive and a diverse way.
Thank you, Mr. Hayden.
Well, thank you,
I told you that
thank
he liked
Chairman.
To talk, didn't I tell you? Mr. Hayden, did you also work on the film Rustin?
Thank God I did not.
Okay.
Oh, Rustin, I did not. I thought you were saying Rust.
No, I
did. Two different films.
But.
Which we were discussing at lunch, so that was fresh in my mind. Rustin was a wonderful film. I did not get a chance to work on that.
But you have well, what is the most recent film that you've been working on, or series that you've been working on?
We did have the character Bayard Rustin in the film Genius, the TV series that just aired on Netflix, or it's on Netflix now. It was on, we did it through Brian Grazer's company, Imagine for National Geographic. It's called Genius, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King. It's an 8-episode limited series looking at comparing the two people's development and as young children all the way up through their demise. And we had a character in there that played Bayard Rustin in that series. And currently, and then right after that, we did The Piano Lesson, which will be out later this year, starring Sam Jackson. Denzel Washington was our producer. His son, John David Washington, was the other co-lead, and Corey Hawkins. And then we just finished Fight Night just a few weeks ago, which is an upcoming series looking at Muhammad Ali's return to boxing after he'd been banned for 3 years, starring Kevin Hart, Sam Jackson, Don Cheadle, Terrence Howard, and Taraji Henson.
Thank you so much. And the only reason why I wanted committee for you to have an opportunity to hear him is just because he was born and raised in Minnesota, went off to California, you know, family issue brought him back. But he's been in the film industry and been pushing and shoving, talking about how he has to fly away all the time, going to these other great places to film, but seeing that Minnesota is a great place to consider. Senator Putnam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to acknowledge Mr. Hayden and say the reason why Senator Draham and I were giggling over here is we're geeking out over your IMDb page because of how ridiculously long and tremendously impressive it is. So I want to thank you for being here to share your wisdom with us on this issue. But also, you're an impressive dude.
Any other questions for the testifiers? All right.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Herr.
Yeah, I have a comment and maybe a question along with it too. Before I go to that, you know, like we just had our environmental discussion and in our little circle council, we're talking about just idea about making films on many of our invasive species in Minnesota. So that's just a thought out there, just thrown out there. But you know, I really support the Minnesota Film Board. They're doing great things. I just want to share with the Film Board and what I heard in the community over the years. And I know on a report here about claiming the reimbursement, the 20 to 25% reimbursement, if your production go beyond 100,000. And I'm going to shift it to the community color perspective. And overall, I mean, no major criticism on the film board, but I've been a number of filmmaker, community college filmmaker, been approaching me about, can we lower that number down because we can't keep up with the $100,000 budget annually. That's hard getting production. If you're a freelancer, it's hard to raise that amount of money. And what I've been telling them is you have to organize as a group. Work with the film board and maybe we can change legislation. But it's been course of 10 years now, we have not made that legislation. But when I see that, you know, now with inflation, with our economic growth, we almost catch up with, you know, that $101,000. It may not be the minimum that we have to call for in order to do a good production, right? So, you know, I'd just like to maybe keep that $100,000 or maybe less at some point, you know, but let's not carry it forward to $200,000 to qualify for that snow beta, the 20% refund, because that would be harder on filmmaker of color, especially.
Any other questions to the testifier? And just to be clear, when I was asked about Rustin earlier, I was talking about Bayard.
Yes.
Rustin.
Bayard Rustin.
Just so that we're clear, I wasn't talking about rustic.
Right.
Which I do know the difference. Any other questions? Seeing as,
Senator, could I indulge? There's one more point that I think we should just make because it touches on that issue. We need to make Minnesota films here in Minnesota, and that's a huge thing. There's a lot of stories that come out of this area, whether music related from our music industry or obviously the issues that we had with George Floyd. There are many shows and stories that are going to be that are being written about that and that are written right now. We don't want those films to be like a Gran Torino, which was a story set in the Hmong community of St. Paul, Minnesota, a district that the senator represents, I believe. That movie was made in Detroit. It should have been made here in Minnesota. Now we have, if we can get this film commission established It's gonna help us do exactly what the senator is asking us to do. So that's, I just want to make that final pitch.
Any other questions? Seeing none, final comments before we lay Senate file number 4446 on the table.
I think everything has been said. I just want to thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing the bill and for considering this in your omnibus.
With that being said, Senate file number 4446, as amended, will be laid on the table for possible inclusion. Thank you so much. All right. Members, we will now go to Senate file 5274, Senator Muhammad. And as Senator Muhammad is coming forward, I know that she has three testifiers. So Abdullah, Harit, and you can come forward. And if I'm saying your name incorrectly, you will have a time to correct me. Efra Ahmed. And we will deal with you two first. And then we know that there's another testifier after Senator Muhammad, who's having a very tough time with that pen of hers. I see. So, Senator Muhammad, you can give us your opening statements around your bill, and then we will welcome your testifiers in the order that you would like for them to present. Senator Muhammad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Before you is Senate File 5274, a one-time workforce development appropriation fund to the Somali Community Resettlement Services. This will be a grant of $1.5 million. They are a volunteer network founded by Somali refugees to address the specific needs of Somali refugees and immigrants. Over time, they have expanded its focus to support all refugees, offering essential community and resettlement services. They prioritize personal capacity in order to empower individuals to support their families and integrate successfully into the American society. Their mission is to promote the social well-being and welfare of all immigrants and refugees, envisioning a world where every family can thrive with personal responsibility and economic independence. I have a few testifiers with me, Mr. Chair, and I would be happy to answer some of those questions. But just to be specific, their services will help build skills and access for folks to get into the healthcare workforce, assist with and translate paperwork for them, and access them into our education system. And I will.
All right. So, Senator Muhammad, should we go to Abdullah Hare?
Yep.
If you would state your name for the record and give us your 2 minutes of testimony.
Yeah, welcome. Mr. Chair and member for committees. My name is Abdullah Harriet Sharif. I'm the executive director of the Somali Community Resettlement Services, a nonprofit organization dedicated to assist immigrants and refugees since 1999. Over the years, we have helped over 100,000 community members by providing them with a resource, language support, employment opportunities, training programs, and economic development assistance. Despite our efforts and training and advocating for the underemployed and unemployed talents in our community, there remains a significant gap between those individuals and potential employers. We recognize the urgent need for a holistic approach to address and close this gap, which is why we are gathered here today. And I would like to introduce my colleague, Ms. Efra, for our program managers to testify to. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so very much. Thank you for coming to the committee today. If you'll just wait right there just for a second, we'll go to Efra Ahmed. If you introduce yourself for the record and give us your 2 minutes of testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and honorable members of the committee. My name is Ifra Ahmed, and I am one of SCRS's managers handling the state grant. So I want you all to take a moment and picture yourself as an immigrant or as a refugee who have valuable skills but unable to use your skills to find a job or an opportunity. Sadly, this is not something that we just need to imagine, but it's the reality of what's happening. This is very uncommon, and we see a lot of highly educated immigrants and refugees working in jobs that pay minimum wage or maybe just a little bit slightly above minimum wage. This form of unemployment that greatly impacts both individuals and the state of Minnesota, which is estimated to have impacted the state about $5.1 billion annually by not fully utilizing the skills and the talents of these individuals. It is crucial for our state leaders to support the resources in implementing a comprehensive strategy that addresses the disconnect between employers and diverse talent. To achieve this, SCRS will enlist the help of employment, diversity, and inclusion experts, as well as community and company leaders to educate both employers and talents at all levels. This includes supporting employers in collaborating and recruiting candidates, not just hiring them, but also retaining employees. By taking a comprehensive approach to address a workforce shortage, we can generate the necessary resources to alleviate the strain on employers and utilize the skills of immigrants and refugees individuals. This would ultimately lead to a stronger economic impact for our state. Together, we have the potential to achieve unprecedented success and prosperity. That's all I have to say.
Thank you so very much, and we are excited that you are here. Let me just ask a couple questions before we go to Faruasa Hassan. So how long have you all been around, and how long have this organization been around? Who wants to answer that question?
Okay. The organization was established in 1999. So we have three locations. Hopefully there's a fourth one that's coming up. We are located in Rochester, Faribault, and the metro area, Minneapolis specifically. We also have an office that's coming up in New Hope. So a little bit.
And about how many people have you served in the time since you've been around? Like, let's say last year, for an example, if you had to look and say, how many people did we serve through our Somali community resettlement services? How many people?
Yeah, let me take that question, actually. We've been serving last year for four community, East African community, Ukrainian community, who are refugee, and Afghanis, and other, you know, new Africans who are coming. And we are close to serve about 5,750 clients for last year. 5,750. Yeah.
And where do you get your funding from?
We get in from the counties, Hennepin County. We get in some of Olmsted County, Rice County. We get some funding also to the state DHS. We also get some of the MDH foundations and community contributions also. We get in a lot of donations.
And of that 5,750 that you said that you served last year, mm-hmm. how many of them did you serve in the area of job training and job placement?
Close to half of them, actually, 2,500.
3,500?
2,500.
So 2,500
yes.
folks, okay.
Yes, please.
And you're asking for $1.5 million here for fiscal year 2025. Mm-hmm. How many people will be served if you are to receive this appropriation?
We want to actually double it to what we have so far. So we have so many waiting lists for Olmsted County, Rice County, and at the same time all metro. So we're expecting that we may include another 350 people that we can employ them.
Okay, just so that I'm clear, I think you said last year, maybe I asked it differently. Did I hear you clearly when you said that of the 5,750, that 2,500 you saw and provided services in job training and placement. Is that correct?
Right.
And if you are to receive the $1.5 million that is being proposed, you said that you would double it. So if you were to double it, that means that you would serve another 2,500 people.
Right. So we are actually, I'm taking it to two actually answers. One will be, what I'm talking about is the placements. But when it comes to the service people who came there to get the training, we're expecting that we may get another 2,500 people to train them. But we are expecting, in terms of the employers who are available, we may think that we can bless them by 300 people. So I'm talking about the blessments for the outcome of this services for the dispatcher.
And of the people that you have placed as a part of your job placement initiative, what has been the average wage that those individuals have received as a part of their job placement?
$22 per hour.
How much?
$22 per hour.
$22 per hour?
Per hour, right.
Okay. All right. Any other questions for the testifier before we go to the third testifier? Senator Dreheim.
Thank you. And thank you for bringing the bill forward, Senator Mohammed. I guess my question has to do with some of the questions the chair was asking. It sounds like you're doing quite a few people every year, which is fantastic. But the $1.5 million, if we were able to find the funds for that, for your organization, what percentage of that would be your total budget? So what's your annual budget overall?
This year our budget is actually...
Mr. Harrod?
Yeah, our budget this year is a $5 million. So out of that one, that's not included about $1.5
million. $5 million.
Yeah. Senator Dreheim.
And then, thank you, Chair. The programs that you do run, you know, you said you had 5750 for clients. How many years are they clients? So how soon do they go through your program? You know, is it a six-week program? Is it a six-month program? Is it a six-year program?
It's actually one-year program we're talking about. It's a one-year program, 12 months.
Senator Dreheim.
Thank you, Chair. You know, I real quick, Chair, Googled how many Somalians live in Minnesota, and I know that's just one quarter of who you're helping, and I appreciate that. There's about 65,000, according to the Google search, in Minnesota, and that number seems high if it's only a one-year program. The 5750 per year if it's a one-year program, and maybe there are different programs, but I think more reporting would be appropriate. So I'd like to offer the A1 amendment.
Senator Dreheim offers the A1 amendment. You should have the A1 amendment in your packet. Yes. With that being said, Senator Mohammed, your thoughts about the A1 amendment?
That's the regular reporting. That's a friendly amendment. I accept it.
Senator Mohammed sees it as a friendly amendment. All in favor of the A1 amendment say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The A1 amendment is adopted. Any other questions for these two testifiers before we go to Frandosa Hassan?
Mr. Chair,
Senator Mohammed.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, it sounds like Fardosa is not with us, but they have somebody else with them who will testify in her place, named Delmar Jibril. Delmar Jibril.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can have that person come forward.
Okay.
I did want to say one thing, though. I think we don't only serve...
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Identify yourself for the record.
I was just wanted to make one point clear, is that we don't only serve Somali communities, and we have a lot of immigrant communities, whether it is the Congolese, the Swahili communities, the Afghan communities, the Ukrainian communities. So we serve anybody who is a refugee. Just wanted to put that out.
Senator Johan.
Thank you for that clarification, and I did realize that. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it was stated earlier that there was mainly four different communities mm-hmm. that you were serving, and my grandfather came from Germany, was in that same situation.
Yeah.
He was a young child, mm-hmm. you know, I think he was 12 when he came. But I can appreciate the battles that mm-hmm. immigrants are facing. So it's not that, it's just for my line of questions was building yeah. on the chair's questions on the financing and the number of people served. Mm-hmm. And the amendment is something I offer on all of the programs mm-hmm. that come through the committee. So
thank you. I appreciate normal. That.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Seeing that now, who is the other person that you want to
talk to? Delmar. Mr. Chair, would you like to say that?
He's so weird. So
I have yeah. Oh, you want to testify? No. Okay, that was our last testifier,
yeah,
Mr.
That's
Chair.
Last one, yeah.
He got a little nervous.
Yeah, he got a little nervous, yeah.
Okay. So any other questions for any of the testifiers? All right, seeing none, Senator Muhammad, you have any last-minute comments before we lay this bill, Senate File 5274, on the table for possible inclusion?
Thank you for considering, Mr. Chair, and hearing the bill. I appreciate you. That's all.
Thank you so much. With that being said, Senate File number 5274 is laid on the table for possible inclusion.
Thank you.
All right, we will now go to Senate File number 5289, which is my bill, and Senator Muhammad is coming over to take this position.
Mr. Chair, you can begin your testimony. This is the deed supplemental bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As you see that this is deed supplemental budget, every year you know that, or when appropriate, a supplemental budget will come forward from the governor's office and the governor's and lieutenant governor's agencies. And with that being said, I'm going to turn it over to Matt Verilich, who is the commissioner. We're excited that he got confirmed the other day, and he will give some opening statements, and then he will take us through the governor's supplemental budget.
Okay, Mr. Commissioner, please introduce yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate President, thank you. For the record, my name is Matt Verilich, and I am the Commissioner of the Department of Employment and Economic Development, the recently confirmed commissioner. So thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity to express that here in person and to all senators for your support. Originally, Mr. Chairman, I had my remarks on a computer, but I knew that signaled length, and so we're just going down to paper here. And also, I'm glad to be the first testifier, so there's no risk of repetition. Here, testifying on Senate File 5289, the Governor's Supplemental Budget Recommendations for Deed. These are primarily technical changes. They are budget neutral, or in fact, in a couple instances, we're suggesting returning some funds to the general fund. And so I know earlier you mentioned that it was music to your ears being budget neutral, in this case, even a little bit better. And so with those introductory comments, with your permission, Madam Chair, I would invite my colleague to walk through the details of the recommendations. Then we'd love to take questions, including the fact we have a couple of our deputy commissioners present as well.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. I think we are sorting through some technology stuff with Dario. I think also members have packets of the slides in the slides in their packets as well. If this doesn't work out,
there we go.
Okay, just wait a minute. Okay. State your name for the record and proceed with your presentation, Dario.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Darielle Dannon, and I am the Government Relations Director for DEED. Apologies for the delay. I always get excited about getting the slides up there, and then maybe I get so excited that I don't wait for the computer. So members, this is, as the commissioner already stated, this is a pretty technical package of proposals, but I am going to walk you through them sort of in the order that they are in the bill language. So the first item here is a change to the Targeted Populations Workforce Grant Program. We're asking for this change because one of the things we identified with this program as we began releasing the RFP and looking to implement it is that particularly in greater Minnesota, we were identifying that there were many organizations who this $1 million threshold, annual budget of no more than $1 million, was just too low because those organizations were serving a larger geographic population and they have a larger budget. So while the agency still wants to have that focus on smaller organizations, we need a legislative change to allow us to be a little bit more flexible here. So that's the first change that we're asking for. The second change that we're asking for, again, kind of in the order that it's in the bill, is one of the things we identified as we went through the bill is we recognized that we had a spreadsheet agreement, as you often do, but then when we had our bill language put together, we accidentally had given ourselves an ongoing base increase, and that wasn't part of the intention. What wasn't part of the agreement? So we are coming here to you to, in some ways, give you back a little bit of money. And that money is in this, you can see it reflected in the little table that on the spreadsheet or on the slide here in 26. And so that's the decrease in amount of funding there. So this change would make that alignment. Doesn't help you with your targets right now, but it will help you with the targets in the future. The next change is a little bit more technical, and it actually involves two parts of the bill. But what we found out is we had a increase of funding for vocational rehab that supports folks, supports organizations who are working with people with mental health issues. We had one-time increase in funding, but what a lot of those grantees had identified is they really wanted to spread that money out over a little bit more time. They wanted to be able to make one-time changes to programs, sort of, you know, investments in things like IT and otherwise, but they had just too short of a window to spend the funding in. So what we're doing here in both the Section 3 and then Section 6 is we're striking the funding in fiscal year 25, and then we're reappropriating the funding, so the $5.055 million. So that funding can be spent through fiscal year 27. And what that will allow us to do is the current grant agreements, we'll amend those grant agreements at DEED, and so essentially folks will be able to spread the money over 4 years. So hopefully that will give them more time to do these one-time investments so that they can upgrade their facilities and other things. The next item is Section 4. So what this one is doing is we created a incredibly, like, historic new fund at DEED and at a couple of other agencies. At DEED, we call it the Forward Fund. We put $400 million into this fund. We're very proud and excited about it. One of the things that we didn't do is we didn't give ourselves the ability to move any funding between those funds until the next biennium. It was an oversight mistake that we made, and so what we're proposing to do here is just make a change to the program to allow us to spend that fund, move that money around. It would be through the fiscal year 27. And then the next item, so Section 5, one of the things you may remember, probably remember folks coming here to testify about, is asking you for funding to fund the Expo for 2027. And unfortunately, Minnesota wasn't one of the states that was, or wasn't a country, I guess we were the state of in the country. So we were not selected, let's go with that, to do that program. Or we weren't selected to have the World Expo here, let's go with that. Sorry, it's been a long day. And so because of that, the funding is sitting in DEED's accounts. And so this is one other place where we are proposing to, this is $5 million, we're proposing in the governor's recommended budget to send that money back to the general fund. Little did you know that the state agency would be here telling you about ways to tighten up your budget. Just kidding. Okay, members. And then the very last item here is if you look at the end of the bill, you see this repealer at Section 8. And one of the things our agencies identified is we had this great program that was created a few years ago called the AIR, or Airport Infrastructure Renewal Grant Program. You know, this was created by a senator who used to be on this committee, Senator Jasinski. I think he really thought this was going to be a great way to make investments in particularly greater Minnesota rural communities in their airports. Unfortunately, you know, and this is sometimes what happens when we create new programs, one of the things we've identified is that the activities that are done by this program can be done in the BDPI program. And so we've identified that this is not a program that's received any interest. We didn't fund it in the last biennial budget year. And so we're proposing to also sort of sunset the program or repeal it. And with that, members, I am to the end of my comments here, and so I will turn things back to our bill author or the commissioner for last words.
Mr. Members, Chair. That is the supplemental budget from DEED, and we'll stand for any questions of any of us, so any questions from the committee.
Thank you, Senator Champion. I will start with a question for Dariel, if that's okay. On the first slide, we're requiring, we're changing the annual budget for organizations that are getting money from $1 million to, I think, something more than that because, right here, okay. We're removing the, no. Okay, so what is the minimum budget? If the maximum was $1 million and we're changing that, like, what is the minimum for organizations in order for them to receive this funding?
Chair, so yes, you are correct that we are striking the upward limit of organizations able to receive this funding. This is a competitive grant program, so the agency doesn't have a minimum that an organization would need to have as an annual budget to compete in the program. And in fact, there's some components of this, including the capacity building portion of it, that is absolutely intended to support small organizations. So there's definitely not a lower threshold here. You would be required to be a legal entity and kind of have all of those items, those boxes checked, but there's no minimum.
Thank you. And members, do you have any questions for Senator Champion or the commissioner? Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I was wondering if Ms. Noldner could kind of walk through. I appreciate DEED giving us $5 million back, but I noticed on the very next line they request a $5 million appropriation, so it seems like a little bit of a wash, if I'm reading that right. But I was wondering if Ms. Noldner could kind of walk through the financial aspects of this bill. The impact of lines 2.16 through 2.19, along with any other changes in appropriations. I'm just kind of curious how it comports with the targets.
Okay, Ms. Longer.
Madam Chair, Senator Pratt, I will try my best. Let's see. So on page 2, lines 16 through 19, I believe this is a reduction of the general support services in the TAILS. So reducing the amount, I believe, by $4 million over the biennium, so 26, 27. And then let's see. On page 3, paragraph C, $5.055 million is being reduced from the second year. So it's keeping $5.055 million in the first year. And then the amount that's being reappropriated on page 5 under section 6 is reappropriating that second year funding. So it looks like that amount is really, the money is being shifted from that paragraph in the second year and then being reappropriated in the same year. It looks like for the same, ultimately the same purpose, it just extends the availability of the appropriation. And then going back to page 3, actually going to page 4, the cancellation in section 5 is the expo cancellation, so canceling $5 million. And I believe that's it. I'm just reviewing section 4 on page 4. And Ms. Dole Fontaine will take that one.
Madam Chair and members and Senator Pratt, in section 4, this was an article that did the Minnesota Forward Fund, and there's the Climate Innovation Program. And so you'll see on line 4.23, it strikes that these transfers can be done between the different programs. So it's removing that it would only be applicable for the transfers for the biennium ending June 30th, 2027. And then over on page 5, section 7, it's going to codify that section, that particular paragraph D, in a new section of law, so it will be permanent to allow the transfer between the two programs. So that's really what is, I think, is going on with that particular section 4 and section 7. And then I'll send it back to Ms. Noldner to go over the other sections on the fiscal impacts.
Madam Chair and members, I think that covers the fiscal side of the bill.
Senator Pratt?
Thank you. So I just want to clarify, we've got, if I understand, net-net, we're looking at a $4 million reduction in the 26-27 biennium and a $5 million savings in the current biennium, along with the other changes that Ms. Doyle Fontaine highlighted.
Ms. Dolmer?
Madam Chair and members, that's correct.
Thank you.
Okay, members, any other questions for Senator Drahan?
Thank you. My question has to do with Section 8, the Airport Infrastructure Renewal Grant. What fund did that come out of, or where was the money that was appropriated for that? Is there any in the account, or was it part of another account? Just elaborate on that, please.
Dario?
Madam Chair, Senator Drahan, it was a decision made to not appropriate any funds for the AIR account in the biennial budget year. So there's no funding sitting in that account. What this repealer is doing is it's eliminating the statutory language. That's all.
Thank you.
Members, any other questions?
And Madam Chair, just so that it's clear, we know that the money that was going to the Expo Fund is being canceled because we unfortunately did not receive that event here in the great state of Minnesota, and the $5 million that we put forward. I know that the governor's office wants it to go back into the general fund, but we have some other plans for that $5 million.
Senator Drahan?
Senator Champion, I hope that goes to southern Minnesota. There's a big need in south central Minnesota.
Madam Chair, Senator Drahan, we'll certainly think about it.
Okay, seeing no other questions, this bill will be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you. Or do you have anything else you want to add, Senator Champion?
Nothing else I would like to say. Thank you, Madam Chair, for hearing this wonderful Senate File 5289.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you so much.
It's pretty cool when you're testifiers, too.
Thank you.
You're hilarious.
Thank you.
I love it. But don't worry, we're nice, but I was like,
okay, so members, that concludes our business on this meeting. Don't worry, we're not spending the night here. On Wednesday, we will be hearing our omnibus finance bill, which will get posted as soon as possible after this hearing. We will also have Deed go through paid family leave and the actuarial study, as well as hear the technical fixes for paid family leave from Senator Mann. It is possible that we will not have time to get through all of this in
our time during committee before transportation meets at 3 p.m. So we will reconvene on Wednesday if that's what will happen after we finish our business. Thank you, and the committee is adjourned.